Hello and welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Show. I'm your host, Angela O'Mara. I am beyond excited for today's guest, Dr. Sheila Barbarino. Dr. Barbarino is a triple board certified facial plastic and ocular surgeon. She has two practices, both in Austin, Texas and California. Today, we're going to talk about what's hot and what's not in the aesthetic industry. Sheila, welcome to the Aesthetic Insider Show. You're here to tell us what's hot and what's not, but first, tell us more about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Angela. It's been such an honor to be asked to be on your podcast. My name is Dr. Sheila Barbarino. Like Angela said, I am based out of Austin, Texas and Los Angeles, California. I've been doing that for many years. Everyone's like, oh my God, that's crazy. Who does that? But it's actually been, it's really helped me stay really cutting edge because I kind of have these two different demographics along with two separate practices that have two separate demands. And it really pushes me to know all the things and hear all the things. And so I think it's been really helpful to keep me very timely and topical and push me to be more up on things than, you know, even I could be if I wanted to be, you know. So today we're coming out of Austin, Texas. So I couldn't be more excited to talk about what's hot and what's not. I think that's probably one of the top 10 favorite things that I like to talk about because I also want to know what's hot. But again, these are just my personal opinions of what's hot and what's not. And I'm looking forward to discussing with them with you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Sheila, there seems to be, I mean, there's many trends and topics and things that we could talk about. But I think what we're seeing, especially on social media and throughout our industry in terms of conferences and trainings and patient awareness, and especially you're living kind of in two states with two different demographics, two different types of patients.
Very different types.
I think that there's kind of like three big trends that have been happening for a while, and they're continuing this year and possibly into, you know, next year too. But I think those three topics, the way I see them, are threads, fillers, and neuromodulators. So
for
let's
sure.
Start with threads. I'd love to hear what's hot with threads, what's not hot with threads, and what are you seeing out there in the marketplace?
So, you know, first of all, in general, I think threads are getting hot and hotter and hottest, you know, I guess, you know, all the degrees of hot. It's so funny because all of us, especially in facial plastic surgery, you know, kind of stood back in that sidelines and is this a trend? Is threads a passing phase? Is it just a spot on our aesthetic, trajectory? Yeah, you know, but now it's kind of been 6 or 7 years. Now we're going on 8 or 9 years of seeing threads as being kind of a hot modality that all of us are using. So I think that if you really want to be cutting edge, you really have to bone up on threads. Threads are still hot. They're only getting hotter. I think if you snooze, you lose. I think everybody needs to kind of get on board with the thread trend in general.
So what is it about threads then that is, you know, for those viewers that don't quite understand what threads are and how they work, what is it about threads that is making them get hotter and hotter and hotter each year?
So we all know that filler doesn't lift tissue. And what we've even seen throughout the pandemic, when people only knew how to do filler, is that we started getting weird facial products, right? People started getting these huge cheeks because they were trying to lift all this jowl with making elongating the jawline, elongating the chin, making higher and higher, bigger and bigger cheeks to stretch out all this tissue as much as possible to get rid of this jowl.
Okay.
Now we know that better, that it doesn't really lift tissue. And so what we need to do is we need some sort of modality that lifts tissue without surgery, because there's always the non-surgical patient. You know, I don't care how much we love to do surgery and how great surgery is, there are patients that either can't do it, won't do it, will never do it, or aren't ready to do it, right? So we have to have something in our armamentarium to do for those people. Mm-hmm. So that's where thread kind of fills that, branches that bridge between the non-surgical and the surgical. And I think it was Melinda Benz that said, you know, somewhere between the needle and the knife is kind of where threads lies. And I kind of love that saying, right? It truly is in between the filler neuromodulator patient, microneedling patient versus let's cut, let's lift, let's do a facelift patient.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, actually.
Yeah, it really resonated with me, right? It's like somewhere between the needle and the knife is where threads. So what we're also seeing, that's for those of you who already jumped on the bandwagon and know that threads are a hot thing, and that's kind of where I am. I think that with the pandemic, especially when they shut us down from operating, you know, I was like, well, why don't I use this time as an opportunity to learn threads? And if I hate them, then I just won't do them when we get back in the operating room, right? It's easy, you know, to learn something and try it. If you don't like it, don't do it, right? So, and then when I really started to enjoy doing threads along with my other non-surgical modalities, when I do new non-surgical rejuvenation. But I think what's really hot in threads lately are skin texture and tone versus just lifting, which I think is new and different to those of us who have been doing the barbed threads and the smooth threads and the twist threads. Now they're doing hyaluronic acid coated threads, which help with skin texture and tone, that is that hydrated appearance when you add that thread inside under the skin, whether you're lifting it or just trying to add or stimulate collagen in a certain area. That nice hyaluronic acid coating really does help with that texture, which again, you know, we're all kind of moving towards that regenerative medicine. So texture is, you know, all the rage, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So let's talk about where threads lift. Because I know, I mean, there's different practitioners who are doing many different things with threads. So currently, where are threads on the human body?
You can lift anything with threads, right? You know, it's just a matter of how long you can lift it, where you can lift it, and whether that's where you want to lift it, right? So you've got to ask yourself, you know, is this an anatomically correct position that you're lifting? You know, is this going to be, is an area of huge movement? Because then you need to use more threads. You know, I think the number one complaint that practitioners as well as patients have is that they don't last that long. That's not the case. You're just not using enough, regardless of it, where it is. So if you're using enough threads, and you're using the right strength and the right thickness for the right reason, there's no reason it shouldn't last for a year plus. So that is what you have to remember. It's you know, it's easy to blame the modality, but maybe you're just not using it the correct way. Mm-hmm. So once I started really getting really comfortable with threads and using more and more threads, that's when I really started getting that longevity and that lift that I really wanted to see ultimately.
That's great. So now let's talk about what are the newest and the hottest today thread techniques? And then what are thread techniques that were hot 6 months ago that maybe or a year ago that are not quite so hot?
So what's hot is not necessarily what I'm doing. I'll tell you what I'm seeing that's hot, and I'll tell you I'm not 100% on board with the new hot techniques.
So maybe definition of hot, like I said, you're seeing what's hot. So in current times, what does hot mean? Is it we're seeing a lot of it on social media, a lot of people doing it?
A lot of people are doing these new. So originally when I was taught and when we're teaching a lot of people, and still, I think the people that do threads or have been doing threads for, you know, a couple of years, usually we do one or two insertions up here and we kind of lift from, you know, this vector or do the reverse vectors, you know, pulling up from this point. What I like about that is that it hides that 18 gauge insertion point. You know, when laymen, patients, people that are not experienced in the medical field see this big hole from a needle point, even though we know it's fine, it'll heal, no problem. You know, it is, and it can be scary for the patient, right? Along with the fact that I still think that threads carry like an ick factor. You know, the thought and the hearing of the thread going in and the crunching and the pulling, patients have this like ick. I think that adds another element to this treatment modality, right? So even though, you know, people do neuromodulators and fillers and injectables, oftentimes they can't hear it or feel it, you know, to that extent it's pulling up. So it's different, right? So it's just, it's a different thing. But what I'm seeing a lot of is a lot of entrance points down here and along here, where you can really see more than multiple entrance points in different areas. So I think that's what we're seeing more of. So initially, when they first brought out threads, there was initially like you make one insertion point and kind of use that as your, where you place all your threads and kind of go in different directions. But I think that a lot of practitioners are finding that, you know, if you can get down here and pull this way, you get more of a lift.
Okay.
You know, because it's closer to the area of the, you know, just like a fulcrum, like any fulcrum, you know, the closer you get to the area that you want to lift, the better lift you'll have. So I could see that as being definitely a bonus, but I do think that I get enough lift from my higher up insertions that don't freak the patient out as much. And I do try to minimize as best I can the number of insertion points, because I do have patients on the higher skin type, you know, 4, 5, and 6 that do tend to get a little bit of hyperpigmentation from the needle point, insertion point itself, but those go away. But I do think that they would freak out if they had, you know, 5 or 6 insertion points down here that they could see visibly for, you know, a couple months. I think that really is kind of too much handholding that, you know, my soul probably won't be able to make it through, because I'm a little older and a little grumpier, you know?
What about like specific areas with threads? So they said you can lift anything.
Okay. So let's talk about what's not. We, you know, it's so funny because you keep bringing up the key thing that is so interesting, especially in aesthetics. I think that social media is now guiding my treatment. Like, isn't that kind of weird? And, you know, and I try to block it out. But I mean, it's just like anything else. Like, you know, I've been around for, you know, a long time now, and, you know, people would come in and say, I want to look like this person on TV or this person in this magazine, whatever the medium is. We can keep blaming social media, but it's just another medium of which patients listen to, whether they get it on TV or their favorite sitcom or a movie or, you know, their magazine. Just because they're getting it on their phone doesn't mean that it's not giving them the knowledge or the, you know, what their beauty aesthetic that they want to look like.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, is Instagram influencing our treatments? Yes. But is it a bad thing? I mean, it's the future, right? I mean, I'm 100% sure, right? In 10 years, we're going to be sitting here on your podcast and you're going to be asking me, you know, how many people come in wanting to look like this AI person, and this person's not real, right? So, you know, whatever it is, it's influencing us. It's influencing.
It's happening already.
It is. It's on, right? So, you know, get on board, because, you know, there's only so much that you can swim upstream, right? So things that I'm seeing that are currently not hot, that were hot. We went through this whole trend with the fox eye, Kylie Jenner, who else? What's her, you know, both of the, what were those sisters? I forget. The model sisters. Why can't I think of their name? The Hadid sisters. Yes.
Oh, Bella, okay. Yeah.
Bella and Gigi had these, you know, huge cat eye. I think that's fox eye. That's kind of had it. Megan Fox had it for a little bit. That's kind of had its day. Patients are no longer coming in asking for it. I don't think it lasts that long. It's not a great aesthetic in general. I think it makes people look a little odd and weird. And I think that as a practitioner, we don't really like to do it. People bruise a lot. The eyes are very vascular. It takes us a while to do it. It's not worth our time. It's not worth their money. So I think that's why the fox eye has come and gone. Thank Jesus that it came and went. Even though I really do like to do treatments around the eye, it's wonderful to rejuvenate the eye. The eyes are, you know, the focal point of the face, but this is certainly just not a treatment that I really recommend. On that note, I'm seeing that a lot of times, when probably about even the last 3 years, 4 years, a lot of people were using threads, the smooth and twist threads around for the tear trough. I think that's kind of fallen out of favor now that people are getting more and more comfortable with doing tear trough filler.
Okay.
What I saw oftentimes with the threads around the eyes is oftentimes because of the dynamic area, because of our sphincter muscle that orbicularis oculi around our eyes, that eventually that thread would kind of poke its way out or cause its way to be seen around the eyes, especially because of the thinness around of the skin around the eyes. So I think that's fallen out of favor. Again, I think that's because we're seeing more and more tear trough filler, which is helping that tear trough problem versus using a thread. I also think that what's fallen out of favor is using those threads around lips. That, again, any super dynamic area, I don't think is a good, threads are not a good solution for.
Yeah, I was going to say with the eyes, it's probably because there's so much movement. I mean, I move my eyes like crazy all the time.
All of us.
So my mouth. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I can imagine there's so much movement moving that thread.
Even lips. So think about lips. You know, it's a thread that goes in there and it's supposed to give, you know, more of a border around the lip margin. It looks pretty when people are not moving their lips. However, it does create kind of weird, awkward lip movements. And I do think that it's not a great solution. I would much rather use filler around the lips. And so I'm so happy that that's also fallen out of favor.
Okay. So we've had what's hot with threads and what's not hot with threads. Is there anything more with threads that our audience needs to know about?
I mean, I think that there's more and more threads coming to the United States. There are great companies here, Nova, Lesenkrez, Mint, Merrick. There's a lot of great thread companies here in America, but I think there's even more outside the United States that have even better, you know, not even better threads, more threads, different threads, threads that do different things. So, you know, if anyone's starting or hasn't gotten into the thread craze yet, you know, I say learn one kind of thread, a good thread that from someone, a mentor or a friend that they really trust, and really get good at that one thread. And then you can move around the different modalities. I myself use kind of all the current threads that are on the market. I don't stick to one particular company. The reason why is because they all have different things that are better about one thread for another, depending on the patient's needs and what I'm trying to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, like you said, it's like some threads are good for certain things and other threads are good for other things. And so
that's exactly right.
In which do you, you know, choosing which in your hands do you have the best result?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now what about, so let's move on.
Let's move on to what else is hot.
Fillers have been hot for a long time. And I know I've heard you say, or other people say, you know, that there is somewhat of a drop in the percentages of filler and the market. But I think we saw such a massive growth in fillers that in recent years that even if there is a drop in the market, it's pretty minimal compared to the substantial growth that we've witnessed.
Yeah. So I think that I agree with you 100%, Angela. So, you know, it's interesting because I think that after COVID, when everyone got back to, you know, seeing people, everybody wanted to look rejuvenated. Everyone wanted to look refreshed. Everyone needed their fill. And I do think that a lot of practitioners kind of went overboard and it really did give filler a bad name. You know, people started seeing kind of overfilled faces, overfilled everything. And I think people got carried away too, right? Yeah. You know, we can't just blame the practitioner. We have to blame both, right? I mean, the practitioner probably shouldn't have done it, but you know, when your patient is constantly there and they want just a little bit more and you don't see any harm and it might make them look a little bit, but I mean, it's a slippery slope, right? But I do think that, you know, there's been this backlash that patients are like, you know, I'm over filler. I'm over this. I'm over that. I do think it's going to swing back in our direction, which is, you know, these things ebb and flow. We can't, you know, worry about these little dips in, you know, purchase a filler? You know, is it due to threads? Is it due to lasers? Is it due to, I don't think so. I think it's just that patients came in kind of gangbusters after COVID, and we're seeing a little bit of a drop because people have been filled. They look good. They're just taking a quick break because now they're busy. All of us are
Traveling. Like, remember during COVID, nobody could travel. So they spent their money on cosmetic procedures.
Right.
Once they could. And now they look fantastic and they're filled and they're traveling a little bit.
It may just be that they're just taking a hot minute to, you know, work and earn more, you know. So again, I don't think that this is something that's going to stay, but I do think it's very exciting because I think that the filler companies have taken the opportunity to really come up with even more, to bring more fillers into the United States and bring them to FDA approval for us to use. So there's a bunch of new exciting things. So there's Skin Vive that's coming to the market. There's new indications such as eye light. There's going to be an explosion of tear trough FDA clearance. You know, like I said, the two that are currently FDA approved are the Allergan one, the Bella for tear troughs, and then there's eye light. There's a lot of fillers that you can use for tear troughs, but those are just the two that are FDA approved currently. Yeah. There's also, I'm personally one of the sites for the FDA approval for Bellotero Intense outside the United States. There's a whole line of Bellotero, just like how Restylane has a whole line of Restylane here in the United States, and Juvederm, there's a whole line of Juvederm. The same thing with the Bellotero line for MERS, and they're bringing FDA approval to Bellotero Intense, which is the more the higher G prime.
Interesting.
Bellotero versus their really low G prime Bellotero Intense that we Bellotero Balance that we have in the United States currently. So we have lots of things to look forward to. There's our Harmonica that's coming in as well, which is another calcium hydroxyapatite with hyaluronic acid mix. So we're going to have a lot of options, which is great for us practitioners, because now we're going to have even more, buying power to figure out which ones we like the best and then go with that line. So it just gives us more options, which, you know, have at it. Give us more options. Give us more tools to work on and reach for in our toolbox when we're trying to treat every single problem.
How would you do it? Because again, you're in two states. You know, you're a seasoned, you know, facial plastic, ocular. You're a surgeon by your training, and there's a huge number of non-surgeons now. You know, with the extenders, nurse injectors. You've not had the wealth of experience and skill that you have. With all these new things, you know, like new fillers, new neuromodulators, it's fantastic that you have a lot to choose from now. But how do those new people make that decision? And how, like, what would you recommend they do? Because the patients, I mean, all of these companies are going to be advertising, again, through social media, through magazines, through everywhere. So then... It's not just, well, I want Botox, because Botox was the only word out there. You know, now there's so many other names. How does a practitioner know which to choose, and how does a patient make a selection?
I don't think the patients should make the selection.
No, but they're going to come in and say, no, I just read about this. And
100%. They do all the time. It's crazy, right? Like, you want to, for the patients that are watching, let your practitioner choose the modality and the filler that they want to use for your particular problem. And the reason is because in their hands, they know what to do with it a certain way. And if you dictate that, you're not going to get the result you want. They're not going to get the result they want for you. Okay. So if you're a provider, your job is to figure out what gives you the best results. I want to choose the filler or the thread or the neuromodulator that works best in my hands, right? And they all have different intricacies. So it depends on what area I'm treating. And you can never stay stagnant, right? You can never just have one filler for every single type of skin type. So I suggest you get really good with one of them and then you can play with the rest of them. You know, it really is, that's what really makes aesthetic fun, right? It's that you get to kind of pick and play with certain things. You know, for me too, you know, there's so many times that companies come in and they say, listen, try this new filler, right? And I say, well, what's it analogous to? Because I've gotten really good with one particular filler, when they say it's analogous to this, that's where, well, the first place I'm going to try it. And then once you play with it a little bit, then you can move it into your arsenal where there's a space that's missing in your armamentarium, right? So when you go to your toolbox, you're like, you know, what's going to be the perfect fit for this one problem this patient's having? And that's how you should pick your filler and your modality and your, you know, not based on price point, not based on points, not based on how, what a great deal you get, you know, with the company. You really have to do what's best for your patient and for the best result.
Okay. So now that we have all these new fillers and fillers that, you know, will be with us next year, what about what's not hot in the world of fillers?
Anything? Well, yeah. So, you know, to overfill a patient's never been, you know, a great thing. What I think is kind of interesting is that now, because of social media and patient awareness, they come in and they're like, look, I've got some, you know, filler migration. And I think that's kind of hilarious, right? Because it's wonderful that they can identify it now too, right? And I think that obviously filler migration is never in vogue, right? Other things that, you know, swelling is a problem, you know, chronic, you know, obviously tear troughs are one of those areas that are very difficult to inject. So what's not hot is to inject the tear trough and get, you know, either an obstruction in the lymphatics. So make sure that you're injecting deep because you don't want to clog that superficial lymphatic channel. I think that the age-old argument between the cannula and the needle, I hope to God that that's put to rest. I certainly, you know, think that's been put to rest. I think that also the, I think for so long, everyone talked about aspiration. And that was like either the hot thing to talk about. And now I think all of us are starting to realize that aspiration really, it's good to do if that makes you feel comfortable and it makes you feel safe, but it's also a false sense of security because now with such high G prime products that to really get a flashback, it's very difficult to do. So don't get fooled basically. So I think what's not hot is to rely on aspiration alone to be your safety guide. Oh, also ultrasound's very hot right now to figure out where exactly the filler is placed and, you know, where it is in the skin and whether it's what's actually causing the obstruction or whether where the occlusion is to dissolve the occlusion. So I think that's really fun and exciting. I think, what Ben Tolley and Sasha are using leeches for vascular occlusions. I mean, that's new. I don't know if I'm, I'm gonna say this, but I have not had a vascular occlusion on myself. I think that having a leech on my face, if I have an occlusion, I think I'd rather have my facial skin die. That would
leech
freak me out to no end.
Yeah,
but well, apparently
it's like it's an old technique, right? I mean, from God knows where.
I can't even. Angela, it would
not a trend. You know,
what if it like got hungry and crawled in my nose? I mean, that whole like, I guess there's a lady called the Leech Lady in LA. I mean, it's a whole thing. I want nothing to do with that. So I will stick to you.
It's a whole other conversation, but I do have to ask you out of personal curiosity, if you have a vascular occlusion that you need to put a leech, how long does that leech stay on your face? I mean,
I have no idea. I can't even.
Do you like go to sleep with the leech?
No, I said, I don't think any of my patients would tolerate this at all. I mean, I can't even imagine going to the leech lady to get a leech for my patient. Never mind. Like, I think half my patients would be like, that's it. For those of us who are old enough, if you guys remember that one, I think it was a Star Trek, and they put the little slug in the guy's ear. I mean, that was just the guy. Yeah, it was too much. Like, yeah. So that leech is not leeching onto any vascular occlusion that I have. So, you know, if you guys are desperate, I think that would probably be the last thing I would suggest. But I certainly don't want the leech coming to my office with the patient.
No.
They can do that at home, or they can go see Ben Tolley.
Yeah. We'll leave those guys to it. You know, maybe they'll take the leech in next weekend or something.
No, I was with Sasha this last weekend. And he was like, you know, afterwards you can keep it as a pet. And I'm like, I think I would take it outside and step on it.
Yeah. No, just put salt on it or something.
Is that, yes, right? Is that what we used to do? You're right. That's exactly what we used to do. Salt. You don't even need to step on it.
Yeah.
Good old salt.
Keep them out of the garden. Ay, ay, ay.
Right? Or yeah, let it, for those of you, I'm sorry, let me be politically correct. For those of you who are not into that, you can let it free out into the world.
Yeah, let it run wild.
Right? Yes, I do not want it on my face. But, they said that they've said that it works really well. You know, I guess one of them had, or somebody they knew had a vascular occlusion, you know, due to nasal filler injection, which is, you know, a high risk area. We all know it is. And I'm like, the thought of that thing, like, you know, working its way up my nose is just too much.
No. Okay. Well, that's not a trend that I think many people are going to
be down for.
No. Okay. So, what about filler like procedures, like lip size, cheek size, other areas for fillers? What's hot in those areas? What's not hot? What's, or is
so
it?
We're all going back to being natural looking. I think that there was, you know, the lip crack, you know, crease, you know, that, you know, we were seeing a lot of this like line in between the lower lip. You know, I think that's kind of gone to the wayside a little bit. We're seeing, you know, more and more jawline. I think that's not a trend that's ever going to go away. I think we're, you know, all of us are really enjoying a good, strong jawline. Who doesn't want a good jawline, you know, to look snatched or whatever. But I think we're all looking more and more natural, which is great. Okay. You know, with expression technology and all of these other technology, you know, everyone wants to look good, smiling, standing up, you know, exercising, doing our yoga and our Pilates, and really expressing and living our lives versus like just the static looking good face. So I think that that's a wonderful trend. Let's talk about the neuromodulators.
Neuromodulators. I mean, you touched on them a little bit, but it seems like there's so many down the pipeline. So yeah, let's.
There are a lot down the pipeline. So there's the QM from Galderma. Rello botulinum toxin. That's the one that's pre-mixed. That's kind of cool. I am one of those practitioners that do like to kind of make a larger dilution or a smaller dilution based on, you know, how I'm treating. But I do think there is something to be said about a pre-diluted syringe that I don't have to go dilute it every time. I'm excited to try it. I think that it certainly has a place in my practice, so I don't have to, you know, constantly be diluting neuromodulator all day. I think it's a great idea.
Which company is that?
That's Galderma.
Oh, that's Galderma. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. There's other, Hugel is releasing their neuromodulator. I think that, what else? There are quite a few that people are trying to.
And you mentioned Evolus, you know, and how the new kind of skew, they're going to have a variety. So
yeah, I think we're going to see that. We're going to see them make a big push in the next couple of years. You know, we'll see what happens. I think that Daxi, you know, was new and different, and it still is. You know, we're still trying to, you know, gauge whether the longevity is there or not. You know, some of us are seeing it, some of us are not. I do think that patients are price conscious, you know, and so I think that that is one limiting factor for Daxxify, as well as the practitioner, because we're paying a little bit more for it and we need to use a little bit more. So it's, you know, there's that. So, you know, I think that all of us are getting super price conscious since everyone keeps raising their prices.
So let me ask you, with so many neuromodulators and available, do these neuromodulators do different things? Are they more beneficial in one area or over the other? Or?
No, you know, and that's what I think is so funny. I think that, you know, everybody's investing and double downing in all of these neuromodulators in the industry. And yes, neuromodulator is a wonderful thing, but, you know, does it pay the bills? You know, I potato, potato, you know, is it going to make me rich? No, you know, it's all the other stuff that's going to, you know, that pays the bills. So yeah. I think it's so interesting that the industry is so focused on neuromodulators. Do we need to have it? 100%. You know, is it a loss leader? Kind of, a little bit. You know, if I only did neuromodulators, I would be poor. You know, yeah. I'd just be scraping by because the margin isn't enough on neuromodulators.
Yeah.
You know, and so we need neuromodulators because, you know, we all talk about panfacial rejuvenation, and it's certainly one piece of the puzzle that needs to be there to preserve, protect, prevent, and give a more relaxed, youthful look. So we have to have it, but is it our end all be all? No, it can't be. None of it is. And so the margins are what matter, right? So I think it's so interesting that everyone's investing so much in this like neuromodulator war, you know, like, oh, we have the best neuromodulator. No, we do, you know, and it's like, we don't really care as long as it works good and our patients are happy and we get good results with it and it doesn't cost us too much and it doesn't break the bank, you know?
Yeah. And then the patient comes in and says, oh, I'd like to have some Botox, please. That word is such a household name.
You know, it's interesting though. I think that patients are getting much more, aesthetic patients are getting much more knowledgeable. And I can honestly say that I'm hearing that less and less, and it still does work well. And that's why it's still alive and kicking these days, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They also bought that other short acting, neuromodulator. So I'm interested to see when they're going to release that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so fascinating. I mean, I know there's so many other things that we could talk about, but I think we've covered the big three in this podcast. But I do want to ask you, Sheila, because this is such amazing information for, again, whether it's a practitioner that's listening or a patient. What do you see as the next evolution for our industry besides evolution within these three categories?
You know, I don't know. It's interesting, right? I think that you need to use all three together in some fashion to really comprehensively treat your patient in a, you know, in the correct way to really make them look their absolute best. But I think that, you know, the future of aesthetics, you know, we're only going to see better neuromodulators, better fillers, better threads that have less downtime, that immediately work without bruising, without swelling. You know, we're going to be able to do even more and more. And, you know, as a surgeon, you know, I love to operate, but I see my practice becoming more and more non-surgical. And I think that you ask any surgeon and that's the case, right? And I think that it's going to become more and more like that. Patients don't want to have that downtime and they certainly don't want to have their surgical scar. And it's making all of us have to level up. And I think that's exciting, you know, and I think that we can only see better and better things.
Well, Sheila, thank you so much for being on the Aesthetic Insider Show. That was...
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And for those of you still with us, remember to watch next Wednesday for another exciting episode of the Aesthetic Insider. Dr. Barbarino, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.